This was the sound in Sendai, Japan, the closest city to the epicenter of today's 8.9 magnitude earthquake, as it hit. On this tweet from a home video camera, you can see things falling off the shelves. Then the family makes its way out to the beautifully manicured suburban streets. A woman falls to the ground. Another comes running, crying, her frightened child on her back. The earth shakes for well over 2 minutes. We don't know what happened to these people. The 23-foot tsunami that followed the quake moved inland like a horror movie, carrying away a ship with 80 dock workers from a shipbuilding site. Aerial footage shows it then churning across farmland, carrying burning buildings, large boats, consuming cars as they try to outrun it. Sendai Airport is inundated with water, cars, trucks, buses, and thick mud. Fires have spread through parts of the city. Police say 200 to 300 bodies have been found. Kyoto News, Japan's leading network, is reporting 88,000 people missing across Japan, the worst quake in the country's recorded history, one of the worst in the world. 180 miles away, Tokyo was spared the tsunami but felt the quake. Zaini Talhuni was visiting Tokyo on the 30th floor of an office building when the quake struck. She spoke to the BBC.
We moved away from the windows and I got under my desk and it just became more and more intense. And you could feel the building swaying, and I had the view of the window, and I could see the buildings outside swaying, and there were two window cleaners on the outside of the building opposite mine, and they were swinging back and forth.
Tsunami warnings sounded in the Hawaiian Islands and up and down the west coast of the U.S., but those waves proved relatively mild. Let's start in Tokyo with John Brinsley of Bloomberg News. John, where were you when the earthquake hit and how did it feel?
I was on the 22nd floor of a building in downtown Tokyo, outside Tokyo Station, and it felt very scary. It moved, the building rocked back and forth for several minutes. I can't tell you exactly how, maybe 5, maybe 10. I'm from Los Angeles, and I've experienced earthquakes there, and I've lived in Japan where there are earthquakes frequently, but this was clearly something quite a different feeling and magnitude.
Yeah. Well, just if you can tell us, I mean, having lived in California, you know, there's rolling earthquakes, there's a crack kind of earthquake, there's a shaking, you know, what was it?
This was like being on a plane with a lot of turbulence.
Yeah.
Where you feel you're going side to side, but you also sort of feel as if you're going up and down. And that was nothing compared to the footage that we are seeing even now in the northern part, the northern coast of Japan, where there were tsunamis, something like close to 30 feet, just wiping out fields and boats and cars and streets and buildings as far as the water and as fast as the water could move.
This wave has been unbelievable to watch. It's sort of a wave of flotsam and jetsam that's moving across farmland. It's just been unbelievable to see. Can you see it? In other words, do you have television service where you are?
We have television service. We were watching it live. We were watching cars trying to flee the scene of whatever was behind them, and unfortunately some of them not making it. Tokyo, which is Japan's biggest metropolis and has something like 25 million people going in and out of it every day, virtually ground to a halt. There are reports of nuclear power plants north of Tokyo in a place called Fukushima, about 200 miles north east of us, that had to be shut down. The latest report, the government said that one of the coolant processes in one of the plants was failing, and they had ordered an evacuation of thousands of residents in the area.
We also see pictures of oil refineries and exploding in flames.
That was seen outside of our window. It's about maybe 10 or 15 miles away from where we could see, but there was a very large fireball and a flame that went on for hours, and it was quite terrifying.
What about the airports? I saw pictures of one airport just completely underwater.
That's in the area of Ibaraki, which was completely flooded. The major airports in Tokyo, the Narita and Haneda airports, thousands of flights have been grounded. And right now, transportation is slowly in the central Tokyo area getting back, but we've heard nothing in terms of service up north.
John, I understand, if you don't mind our mentioning it, that you're there with your son.
Yes, that's true.
Are you still on the 22nd floor of a building? Are you worried about aftershocks? Or...
Well, we've been feeling the aftershocks. Fortunately, my son, I guess, has a very quick learning curve because while he was not very happy about it when it happened, 7 hours later, he isn't noticing any of the aftershocks. So maybe that's the virtue of youth.
Well, and I'm wondering, too, you know, I mean, obviously you're reporting on this, but what are people doing? Are you, do you stay in a tall building? Are you worried about buildings collapsing, infrastructure being weakened? What?
Yeah. Well, Japan, because it lying on a fault line and its history of earthquakes, has some of the most sophisticated earthquake resistant architecture in the world. The building that I am in was built less than 10 years ago, and while it shook and many other buildings in the area shook, there was nothing to worry about, perhaps in the aftermath anyway. There was nothing to worry about. Our elevators were down for several hours and we couldn't evacuate even if we had wanted to.
What do you think? I mean, it's early on, but what do you think is going to be the impact of this?
Well, clearly there's going to be a massive restructuring, rebuilding effort that's going to be needed. The government has pledged to do everything it can. The Bank of Japan has pledged to make additional financing available, if possible, additional liquidity. Now, that's a little bit hard since Japan's interest rates are at zero already. The Bank of Japan, the central bank, is going to have an emergency meeting on Monday. Prime Minister Kan, whose approval ratings have fallen amidst several problems, including a parliamentary stalemate over funding next year's budget, and by next year I mean the year that starts April 1st, met with opposition leaders today, and everybody essentially pledged to go all in together. There is I suppose, if it could be seen this way, an opportunity for Mr. Kan to exercise some leadership and for the political sort of impasse that has existed to work together in getting the country back on its feet. It clearly is going to take a long time.
John Brinsley of Bloomberg News speaking to us from his 22nd floor room in Tokyo. John, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Let's bring in Ian Miller now. He's assistant professor of modern Japanese history at Harvard, but he's long studied Japanese responses to natural disasters and, in fact, spent years in northern Japan, the area that's most affected. So first, Professor Ian, have you, I'm assuming you have friends there. Have you been able to reach anyone?
No. Hi, Robin. Hi. I have not been able to get in touch with anyone. The phone lines seem to be down. Of course, no one's online, which is how we usually stay in touch. So I'm very concerned for friends and their families.
Well, this is, I mean, we're hearing from people in Tokyo that there's a bit of a panic, you know, that people can't, you know, everybody has family, you know, spread across the country. And I'm wondering if, you know, you're feeling that same heart palpitating, you know, you can't get to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very concerned, and in particular, the area where I lived, I was there for about 2.5 to 3 years, and it's a very rural area. We're talking about kind of the Appalachia of Japan in some ways, sparsely populated north of the main city of Sendai, fishing villages and small towns sprinkled along a coastline there. And so while we're getting images and news from Sendai, which is a substantial city, we're talking about a very modern city of over 1 million people with a major university and so on. As you move north, the area rapidly becomes less developed. And largely, I've been paying attention to the prefectural websites there, and their head of disaster services is saying that the roads are cut off, and the officials themselves are unable to get to some of the towns and villages that we're talking about.
Prefectures, these are sort of like states?
Exactly, yeah. So when Japan is split up into a number of prefectures, and which are exactly administrative units akin to the state.
Well, speak to the tsunami. Magnitude 8.9 quake, 23-foot tsunami. The image is just stunning. It's almost like the blob, you know, moving across the landscape, carrying all this stuff. Put this in context for us. We know that Japan has had tsunamis before. You've been in tsunamis before, right?
That's right, yeah. Regularly, we see them, and I should say that this area is, in a sense, very well prepared for what was coming relative to other areas. That is, in the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami, we saw coastlines and so on that were not knit into a warning system. Mm-hmm. Japan is a part of a consortium that helps to run the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center, which comes out of Hawaii, and then through national and local government, there's a very well developed emergency response system in place so that regularly school children and so on will go through tsunami drills. You'll get sirens that come over public address system, TV and radio announcements. People should know what to do, but what often happens with these things is we forget because they don't happen on this scale regularly.
Could you give us a sense, this scale, is this bigger than any? We know there was one in 1960 that wiped out towns.
Yeah.
What's your sense of what we're seeing today?
Well, I don't know yet. I don't want to exaggerate things and overstate the severity of what's going on, but looking at it, I'm very struck by how devastating the tsunami has been. This area has seen three major tsunami and quakes. 1896, where we saw something like 22,000 people lose their lives, and recall that that this is a time when far fewer people lived along this coastline. And then in 1933, another major event, something like 5,000 to 10,000 homes washed away, 3,000 plus people dead. And that was centered in the town where I used to live, where something like 50% of the population was washed out to sea, and 90 to 100% of the homes were swept away as well.
Is this Miyako?
Yeah, this is Miyako, Iwate Prefecture.
Well, and just how does that look to you today? Because I think that's one of the towns that seems to be inundated again.
Yes, it is. And I honestly can't find detailed information about what is happening there on the ground. I can say that in the wake of the 33 tsunami, and then again in 1960, the what so-called Great Chilean Earthquake, which was the largest quake on record, substantial tsunami mitigation measures were put in place. We're talking about sluice gates, ferroconcrete walls that are as high as 10 meters, stretching several kilometers along the coast. So the government has put considerable resources into this area in anticipation of such an event. And so I'm hopeful that that's helped to mitigate the impact. But again, I don't have detailed information. I can't speak to what's happening on the ground there. And the images from Sendai lead me to be very concerned.
Yeah. Ian Miller, assistant professor of modern Japanese history at Harvard, who's studied Japanese responses to natural disasters like tsunamis, has hiked up mountains there, come across monuments marking high water marks for that tsunami from the Chilean earthquake, and now is waiting to see, as we all are, the impact of this one. Ian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay, much more. We have news about that nuclear power plant that was shut down because the cooling was affected, and thousands were evacuated from that town. Here's a woman in Tokyo describing her experiences to the BBC.
Terrifying, absolutely terrifying. I was born in Japan, I'm Dutch. I've been here for 33 years on and off, and it's the worst experience I've ever had. I hung on to my door so that my dogs and cats didn't run out, but ready to open the door in case the building fell down.
Let's bring in Dr. John Ebel, director of the Weston Observatory, the Geological Research Lab for Boston College. And Dr. Ebel, what's striking us is in the sound that we're hearing, and again, we'll post a tweet at our website of a family escaping a home in just near the epicenter, and the shaking goes on for well over 2 minutes. What's your sense of, you know, put this in context for us?
Well, shaking of more than 2 minutes is what we would expect from an earthquake of this particular size, and that's simply because the crack probably ran for 100 miles or more. The fault that had the earthquake movements on it probably took of the order of 2 to 3 minutes and perhaps even longer for it to irradiate its entire amount of seismic energy. A magnitude 6 earthquake, the ground strong ground shaking might last for, say, 20 or 30 seconds. A magnitude 4 earthquake, the strongest ground shaking really only lasts a few seconds, and then weaker shaking for longer than that. So that's one of the frightening things to people who would have experienced this earthquake in Japan today, the very, very long amount of ground shaking. And then some of the damage would have been caused by that also.
Well, and then this wave, the tsunami, it's just, again, it's stunning aerial photography of this wave just crossing the land and cars trying to escape and not being able to. It's just really quite something. But tell me, as a seismologist, your reaction to this, did people see it coming? Was there warning? Your sense of, are you surprised to see it in this area?
Well, this is an interesting earthquake, very interesting earthquake, I would say, from a seismological point of view, because of its very large magnitude. We've seen earthquakes up to 8.3 or so in the last decade or two in the subduction zone of northern Japan, and earthquakes about that size further to the south over the past decade or so. We had not seen anything as large as 8.9. And that's the really big surprise, I think, in this earthquake. Some seismologists, I'm sure, felt that an earthquake this size could occur. Others did not. But now this puts the possibility of major earthquakes in other parts of Japan, farther south, closer to Tokyo, farther north along the subductions under Hokkaido, as now a major question that's going to have to be studied in great detail.
Well, and that's, in the near future, but what about right now? We know there were 50 aftershocks. What are you seeing now? Are they in for more?
Well, they are certainly going to be experiencing regular aftershock activity over the next few days in the northern northern Honshu area. And some of those aftershocks could be as large as magnitude 7, perhaps even larger. So they are not out of the woods as far as strong shaking is concerned, although not nearly as strong or as long-lasting as the 8.9 main shock. The aftershocks will become less frequent as the coming days and weeks pass, but there is still the possibility for stronger aftershocks even over the next 30 days or longer.
Do you also work with satellite imagery? Can you see how much of the country or the coast, especially in the northeast, is underwater?
Satellite imagery certainly does show where the inundated areas were. And, of course, the inundated areas are right along the coast, and in some places may extend only hundreds of yards inland, and other places they may extend maybe a mile or a couple miles inland. If you are on higher ground and did not feel that tsunami, the entire threat came from the shaking itself,
right,
both the main shock shaking and the aftershocks.
Right. And what about some of the other things we've been seeing? Just in recently, there was that lava spewing from a volcano in Hawaii. Of course, an earthquake in New Zealand last month, devastating. Is there a pattern here? Something going on?
No, there's no pattern here. The volcano in Hawaii gets more active at times, gets less active at times. The earthquake in New Zealand was an aftershock of a 7.1 earthquake that occurred last September, and not a particularly surprising aftershock from what we've seen down there. Every day there are earthquakes magnitude 6 or greater somewhere on the globe, and about once a month a magnitude 7 or greater earthquake. At any given time, there are as many as a dozen or more volcanoes active on the surface of the Earth. So from a seismological and scientific point of view, this activity is not related.
Yeah. But one last question, Dr. Ebel. We are seeing these incredible images of a huge, it looks like a bathtub drain, but it's out in the ocean and actually in a harbor off the east coast of Japan, a huge whirlpool. Now, we spoke with a seismologist earlier today. He was amazed to hear about it. He thought it's quite possible that the whirlpool may be linked to one tectonic plate being pushed under the other. But it's just huge. There's a ship in the picture, and it's dwarfed by this huge whirlpool. What's your sense of what that is?
Well, I would have to defer to what my oceanographer colleagues would describe, but my first impression when I saw the video of it is there must have been some sort of water circulation in the way that tsunami came on shore and was affecting that particular area to cause the water to actually circle around. And my guess is modeling of the water motions will probably show that if the water came in a certain direction, it can cause kind of a circular motion. Mm-hmm. But that's something that we'll obviously be studying. I don't think it was related directly to either the movement of the plate or any sort of hole opening up in the earth underneath or anything like that.
Dr. John Ebel, director of the Weston Observatory, the Geological Research Lab for Boston College, on just one of the many astonishing images today, very heartbreaking images as well. Dr. Ebel, thank you.
You're welcome.